Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio. From the terraces on Cambridge 105 Radio.
That was a very brief and to the point weather report. That was expecting promos and everything on that one. Not going to happen though. So welcome to From the Terraces for this week. And I'm sure nobody heard that. I was actually using the wrong faders because we've changed the systems on the show. So welcome to the From the Terraces for this week. We're panicking a bit at the moment because there's literally virtually nothing to talk about. Only Histon managed to play a game yesterday. United, obviously, FA Cup weekend, which we'd already been knocked out of, and City postponed. And we'll be talking about postponements later on, because that's all we can talk about to Steve when we call him on the phone. A full programme of women's football today, so we'll talk briefly about the Histon game I went to see. So hit twice at Glassworld in one weekend, not bad going. Although I noticed that everything is closed for the women's game. There's no food, there's no nothing. The bar was open, that was about it. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can. All the usual ways to do that. You can text us on 07919 070490. That's 07919 070490. Or you can email studio at cambridge105.co.uk. Steve suggested a topic for texting in. How far have you gone to a game before you realised it was actually postponed? I think it was last season when the Bury game was called off. We got virtually all the way there, but at least I had the advantage of my parents live there, so it wasn't too much of a wasted journey. But I know some people got all the way there to be told it was off, which they weren't too happy about. So text in and let us know the furthest you've gone to find a game has actually been cancelled or turned up on the wrong day, has very nearly happened to me many years ago when I went to see a game in Australia, and we travelled about 100 odd miles to it before realising we'd actually gone there on the wrong day. So we pretended we'd only gone up there to go down to the beach, but we'd actually gone to see football on the wrong day. So everything's going wrong now. The jingle has ended far earlier than I expected it to. So anyway, we'll muddle through. We've got Mark in the studio and we've got Ollie in the studio. We'll be getting Matt on the phone in a second, and we'll get Steve on the phone later on. But the only football we'll say we'll talk about will be Histon. But we'll start, as we usually do, with United. So, unfortunately, because of being knocked out of the FA Cup, not a great deal to talk about in terms of football, obviously, because we covered most of it in the Christmas special. But we'll be getting Matt on the phone. I guess, when did we it on the 27th? So there's been a New Year's game. So we might as well just recap. Lynch's texted in and says, "What a surprisingly good Christmas and New Year, taking 8 points from 12 and remaining unbeaten. Thought we played very well against Crewe, but baffled why we haven't played like this all season. If Derry wasn't so negative and we played attacking football, we might actually be in the playoff spots. Unfortunately, Derry went back to defensive football for the first half against Colchester, but once we went attacking in the second half and pressed Colchester back, we looked good and could have easily won that game. Thought Deegan was an absolute rock in the midfield and easily man of the match. Our wishes came true for that game as well, when Derry dropped his love child Aliso to the bench. But then Amu had to get injured. I'm not really sure what the swearing guidelines are. I'm sure bloody's okay. Allowing that clown Aliso back on the pitch. We may as well have played with nine men with an Aliso and Aziz play. The opposition must love him. I bet it feels they have 12 men on the pitch with Aliso passing the ball to them all game. Can we now be called midfielders 11? And then we'll come back to that, because we've just bought another one, or we've loaned another one in. Why have we bought another midfielder in the transfer window? We desperately need a centre back now. Tugboat Taft has gone, and a striker, but I can't see where we'll get a decent one of them in January unless the return of big bad Barry Corr. Let's Matt, you not Matt, Ollie, you can start this while I get Matt on the phone. Views of the Christmas and obviously the news that we've got. We all knew, given the results, that Derry is safe and barring some major mishap, he's obviously going to make it to the end of his contract and the end of the season. So you talk away while I try and get hold of Matt.
No, I agree with Lynch. I think the Crewe game was a really good performance. One of the best of probably the year, actually, to top the finish the year. I thought the Colchester game, I thought we did play quite well considering Colchester were sort of in and around. I think they're in and around the playoff spots. And I thought they were really poor, actually, Colchester. They really disappointed me when I watched it. I agree with Deegan. Deegan was terrific. And we created a lot of chances in that second half, to be fair. I mean, Uchi and Giovanni linking up a few times. Halliday bombing down the right, putting crosses in. Manucci a couple of times just went past his head or just slightly behind him. We did create chances. It's just, as we've saying again and again and again and again, we probably need a striker.
I think we've got Matt on the phone. Matt, are you there?
Yeah, good evening, Tim.
evening. We were just chatting because obviously not a great deal of football to talk about this week, but we were just chatting. We got Lynch's email and we were just sort of talking about the Christmas period, 8 points from 12 and the transfer window. So Ollie, sorry, I interrupted Ollie. So Ollie's just talking about them at that at the moment.
No, I was just saying, I think the main point from the Colchester game was that we didn't take our chances. I think Giovanni missed a sort of one-on-one with the goalkeeper just to the inside the right of the box. You know, a couple of headers that went past Uchi or just behind him. You know, despite putting our backs against the wall a bit in the first half, we came out in the second half and I think should have won the game. You know, had Colchester got anything out of the game in terms of more than 1 point, it would have been a robbery. But you know, it's just the same again. We need that experienced probably striker just to put the ball in the back of the net. We were talking about options, weren't we, before?
Yeah.
It's going to be difficult, really, to sign a 20-plus goal season striker in January. I mentioned Doidge at Forest Green and Dennis at Chesterfield because you know, you're only probably likely to get a striker who's below you in the league.
But you're going to pay out of contract
exactly,
if you want to do that, so that's
still
the difficulty.
Pay them to get out of their contract.
I mean, Matt, your thoughts on this, but 8 points from 12. I mean, if someone had said, you know, we were going to get 8 points from 12, considering Notts County was one of the games, but ultimately, you kind of feel with that Notts County game, I mean, you know, we talked about this at the time, but it was definitely we threw 2 points away. We should have been 10 from 12. And to be fair, if anyone had got a result against Colchester, it should have been us. I think we, as you say, we missed a few chances. And certainly in the second half, we were by far and away the better team in that game. So you could hardly say you're disappointed from 8 from 12, and Sean Derry certainly won't be because it kept him his job. But the interesting thing out of it, I mean, you've got the aberration of the first half at Barnet and the first half at Colchester, which were two of the dullest first halves we've seen. We were actually playing, you know, exciting passing football for a large part of those games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if you'd have told us all that we were going to get 8 points from the Christmas period, looking at some of the teams we were playing, you know, and you think back to early September when when we did play Barnet and they tore us apart, you kind of thought, oh, 8 points is actually a really good positive Christmas, and it was, you know, and I agree with you, Tim. I think you take out two halves of some of the games and or three halves of including Notts County one, we've actually played some really good football. And you know, the Crewe game, for even though Crewe did have chances, I thought that was probably our best performance for a long, long time. And you know, it's strange to think for a man that was under pressure coming into this period of games, you know, to play the sort of football that we have done. You know, you have to give Sean some credit. You know, it does beg the question on, you know, why would he have to be sort of not a vote of confidence, but perhaps read the riot act potentially to get us to play this type of football. Is baffling, especially when we know that we've been able to play this type of football. It just seems to be hidden away somewhere. And it was a good Christmas. I think it's probably one of the best Christmas periods we've actually had. I don't know if you guys have got any stats, but I think, you know, in recent memories, I don't think we've gone sort of Christmas and New Year undefeated, which really makes a change. And, you know, I absolutely agree with Ollie. You know, you go into that second half against Colchester and, yeah, we were the better team. We absolutely did have the better chances. And what we lacked was, A, somebody in the box sometimes when we were actually putting the ball into the box, and B, was having to play Medialito right wing because, you know, we might have got something if he hadn't been on the pitch.
But I think it's never mind playing him on the wing, it's playing him at all, I think, is becoming a real problem. He's a bit of an enigma, is Medi, because Sean obviously, as Lindsay points out, Sean obviously thinks a great deal of him, but week in, week out, we don't see it from the terraces. You know, you occasionally get that bit of football that you think, okay, we could just about see something in him. But, you know, a lot of the time his passes are so inaccurate and his vision lets him down as well. He either doesn't see a run or he sees runs that never are going to exist and passes into those places. And, you know, sometimes it just looks embarrassing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know what he's got on the manager. Maybe it's because he's a good sort of team player, as you say, Tim. But in recent times, out of all the players that have been playing, I think he's been the weakest link of the team, full stop. You know, he hasn't put the performances in, and he was kind of living off scoring a couple of penalties earlier in the season. Not to say that he, you know, there obviously is a little bit of talent there somewhere, but at the moment he's not really showing it, you know, and it's something that needs to be looked at. I mean, bringing in another midfielder, I'm sure, which we'll talk about in a second, okay, it wasn't the signing that potentially we all wanted. You know, we know what we want, which is obviously, you know, we're going to need a centre-half. Now George Taffler's gone back and, you know, Ollie's right and we all know we need another striker, and there are options there. There's loads of rumours flying about. You know, we won't know anything concrete until obviously something's announced, but, you know, we've got another sort of week before, you know, a massive game Saturday against Mansfield, and you would hope that we would have somebody in before that game, because, you know, it is going to be a tough game, and we do, with Jarbo sort of, you know, still suspended, and, you know, Aziz being about as useful as a chocolate teapot, we're over-reliant on Uche, which you don't want to be in that situation again, and we always seem to end up in that situation where we're very over-reliant on Uche and Giovanni, it has to be said as well. And you know, we've had sort of a week already. We've got one player in. We've got another week before the Mansfield game. Hopefully they're working hard and, you know, improvements need to be made, because there's a tough run of games coming up, and they're games of football that, you know, if we're really serious about pushing for the playoffs like we keep making out, we've got to start winning these games now, and it starts with this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's all down to, you know, so there's obviously discussions happening behind the scenes. You kind of think that given the hype that they've been talking about this transfer window, the first signing they'd have announced would have been a striker rather than another midfielder. But I was trying to say there's not a great deal, obviously, because he's not played a lot of first team football. There's not a lot said about Adam Phillips is right. Yeah, you know, he's a product of the Liverpool Academy. I think he was there for 10 years before he signed a professional contract last year, and we know that he captains the under 23 development team, so he's not, you know, he's not without his skill, obviously, if he's doing that, but there's not really a lot. I was looking at the Norwich Twitter feed, and various fans say that we've actually got quite a good future player there. The question is, you know, how well is he going to fit in with experience that he's got, but again, you know, we're dropping people that we, you know, we could play to fit him in. It's not like we're short of midfielders. You know, the rumours we hear about, obviously the Ricky Miller rumour won't go away. Peterborough are doing their best to talk him up. They're saying that several clubs are interested. They're just waiting for a serious bid to come in for it. They're talking 40 grand plus as a transfer fee, and they're obviously looking to up that. I'm not sure, you know, that Ricky Miller is necessarily, people talk about, oh, he scored loads of goals for Dover, but then, you know, if he's playing at Peterborough's level, he should have scored a whole load of goals down at the level of Dover. I'm not sure that he's necessarily a great signing, especially since, and again, allegedly, I think it was headbutting a policeman, allegedly, that he's up for, with a court appearance in April, which means, you know, if he were to go down for it, that would be the end of the season out. So you bring in a striker, and it looks like it's a signing, not a loan, they're looking for, and you may lose him straight away. And, you know, do you want a striker that's been inside to be playing for the club? It's not necessarily a great role model for the club. But, Lynch, you mentioned Barry Corr again. I can't see that happening now, because you would have thought, given that he's not attached to a club, we could have presumably announced him anytime. So if we were going to announce him as a pay-as-you-play striker, then I'm sure we would have done it by now. I can't see that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine it would have probably been 1st of Jan had it been Barry Corr. You know, like you say, if he's allegedly training at the club, like they've said he is.
Well, he's definitely training at the club. I've seen him down there, so he's been training since they released him.
You would imagine they'd announce it 1st of Jan, 2nd of Jan, you know, as soon as possible. And also, that would massively lift the crowd as well, getting a goal scorer, a striker, you know, in the team. Regarding Adam Phillips, I think, talking about lighter midfield, I mean, you know, we've mentioned there that Medialito is probably, as far as we're concerned, not up to it. And, you know, I think Derry tried O'Neill with Deegan at the start of the season. That didn't really work either. So maybe this Phillips could come in and partner Deegan and maybe give him a bit more assurance and provide something going forward as well. Because, you know, going for sort of the under-23 of top Premier League / Championship size, you know, we brought in Ryan Ledson from Everton, Everton's youth side, and did very well. You know, I think it's happened before, so hopefully Phillips can have a similar impact. And like I say, regarding a striker, I think, yeah, I'm not sure on Ricky Miller. It's at this stage in the season, you want someone who's going to score goals, reliant goal scorer, and if he's going to be, you know, not playing for much of the season, then, you know, it's a waste of money, really.
Matt, over to you.
I agree with Ollie on Ricky Miller. I don't think he's the player that we particularly need, not just for his off the field, but he's not particularly done it at Football League level. The Barry Corr thing, I think we'd all love to have Barry Corr back, but, you know, is he the same Barry Corr that we sort of had when we first had him, when, you know, he genuinely could have stood on one knee and scored goals and it had looked easy? To be fair, you know, I think we'd all admit we'd take Barry Corr with one knee right now, or one leg or whatever, because all he'd have to do is just stand in the box and nod the balls in. But, you know, that one's an interesting one, which, of course, will never go away until the January window shuts. You know, Ollie mentioned like Doidge and Dennis. I think, you know, Doidge is very sort of similar to Jarbo, but he does score goals. Again, you know, would Forest Green be willing to let him go? I don't think so, if I'm honest. Not too sure about Dennis in terms of what Chesterfield are like. Potentially, they might allow him to go if they get a good bid, but, you know, all the sounds coming out of the football club either seem to be sort of somebody like Miller, and as I say, it is a mistake, or potentially somebody a little bit lower. But again, you know, just because we've unearthed Giovanni, although of course we knew a lot about Giovanni from him playing local football, there are others out there that, you know, might not have the same impact as what Giovanni has had on our club, but we don't know. And regarding Phillips, as I say, it was an interesting one. I don't think any of us ever thought a central midfielder would be our first signing. I thought Gary Deegan was absolutely immense at Colchester on Monday, easily his best game I've seen him play this season. I thought it was absolutely fantastic, especially in the first half when we were under a little bit of pressure. And, you know, he really got stuck in, and he was cutting out balls and he was driving us forwards. Easily my man of the match from Colchester. I mean, if the lad from Orange, you know, Phillips has come in to perhaps just take the burden off Deegan, perhaps he's still struggling with his foot, and he has played quite a few games over Christmas, so it might be a chance to, you know, get it to heal a little bit better, then, yeah, it's all well and good, because I wouldn't have O'Neill replace Deegan, and not at all. So, you know, this lad's got a little bit of pedigree by the sound of it. And, you know, as Ollie said, you know, we had Ledson come in who's, you know, had a massive impact. And I think he's potentially got himself a big move up to the Championship. So it can happen. We've seen it happen for us. And Derry does have an eye for a couple of good players on loan. You know, we just think back to the first season when he got all those loan players in, including Ledson and Furlong as well, and all that. So, you know, he has got previous for it. So, you know, we'll give him a chance. But as I say, we don't want him to be another Hawkins where he comes in and sits on the bench or doesn't play and have a full stop for most of the season, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, there's, we were just talking about, because was it Tom Dallison from last year? He was another one of those who never actually got to play. We were chatting, trying to work out, because I was trying to work out if I could even recognise Hawkins at all, until Joe pointed out he was, you know, because I was pointing out, is that him? And he goes, no, Dad, he's black. And that shows I'm not being racist. That just shows how little we'd seen of him. I hadn't actually even realised at that stage. So that's the way it goes. I heard yesterday one of the Histon fans was making a comment. It wasn't you, was it, Mark? You didn't mention Sharman from Cambridge City as a possible signing for Cambridge United. But I think that might be going a bit too far to finding someone in the lower leagues. But
they'd be really annoyed, wouldn't they? Give them to St Ives and they will take Sharman as well.
Because I think it's weird because Tom Knowles has gone back to Westwood Row, but obviously now he's playing for St Ives. He's gone up a step. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't try and, perhaps they did, I don't know, but I'm kind of surprised they didn't try and find him someone even higher than St Ives. It's kind of like, you know, he's done so well at Cambridge City. I'm not sure that, you know, if he's been on the bench, if we've got enough confidence to put him on the bench at United, I would have thought they would be looking for something, you know, almost non-league level, conference level for him to play at rather than St Ives. But I guess perhaps there just wasn't an opening for him there. But I've got a bit of audio that we didn't play last week. I literally had about two or three questions to Sean Derry after the Colchester game. We were just talking about the season to date. So let me just play that, because we talked then about, well, we had a very brief bit about the transfer window. He obviously wasn't giving anything away, but this is what Sean had to say following the Colchester game, but not talking about that, just talking about the season as it stands so far. So, Sean, halfway through the season, Christmas break, a couple of really good performances over the last two games. Take you back to the start of the season. You assembled a squad really early in pre-season.
We did, yeah. And, you know, it's been, again, into that second year of transition, really. You know, trying to re-sculpture, reshape the side, you know, bring the average age down to what it is now. You know, I think the average age without David Ford is about 24. And, you know, bring numbers in terms of the group down and try and push some of the young players out of the youth team in or around the first team squad. And yeah, we've managed to do that. And along the way, you get your ups and downs, don't you? And that's what's happened to us this season. But, you know, we're in it and we're one of them seven or eight teams that are all trying to push for the top seven. And that's got to be the intention for the second half of the season. And I'm sure, you know, last 2 years have not shown me that we can't do it. You know, we've finished ninth and 11th, and I'm expecting something similar this year, and let's hope we can break into that top seven. But 14 other teams have got, you know, that wish as well.
Yeah, and you made this point over last season and into this season as well, that nobody gets promoted on Boxing Day. You know, people there's been a lot of negativity around, but at the end of the day, 5 points away from playoff position is not a bad place to be.
Again, can only stress to where this football club was 3 years ago, where this football club was when I took over in 18th position in League Two, looking over the shoulder, you know, perhaps thinking, oh, we're going to go out of the league again. At no point, at any point, have we ever felt that we can't be a team that pushes for the top half of the top half of this division. Cambridge United are now building a reputation away from, you know, the Abbey about being that resilient, hard, tough team to play against, but with quality. And I've seen that, and I've seen the losses, and I've seen the you know, the negativity, and I've heard the negativity at certain times. But I can only stress, there's no coincidence for the third game on the bounce, whenever we've played at home, whenever these fans get right behind the players, we go and score.
And you talked a lot about, obviously, the January transfer window coming up. You're looking forward then into the new year?
Of course. That's got to be the, you know, that's my intention. You know, my intention is that my contract's here until right at the very end of the season. And I know what I want to happen this second half of the season.
So that's what Sean had to say. We were just chatting while we were winning as Adam Marriott at Royston, whether he'd be interested, whether that would be an interesting move. And again, I'm not entirely convinced that that would be a good move. But I'm sure lots of people. I saw the bi-weekly Kwezi Appiah rumor that comes up every time anyone talks about Cambridge and who might come in. It's always Kwezi Appiah is there on the list. But again, I'm not sure, given the fact that he's hardly played any football since he left us. Yeah. Really, I mean, okay, he made his international appearance, but he's not played much club football. I think someone said he's only played 20 odd games since he left us.
He's been injured again.
I'm not sure why we'd be interested, although romantically we might. It's the same as wanting Barry Corr back. You want Barry Corr back if he's the Barry Corr of old. You don't want him back if he's low, as you said, Matt. Yeah, you know, getting a one-legged player standing in the box might actually be just what we need at the moment. We were chatting before the show about your half season player of the season. So Matt, who would you vote for current half-season player of the season?
I think it's a hands-down decision. It's got to be Sir David Ford, as I now call him, because without that man in goal, where we are now in the league, we wouldn't be at all. We'd be further down the league. I mean, you know, he came into the club, but we all know we'd all heard of David Ford. There's no doubt about it. You couldn't not have heard about him. But he's a fantastic player, he's experienced, and you know, he came in with a reputation of not being able to make saves. Well, I think, you know, some of the saves that he's made this season are up there on par with with Will Norris, who unfortunately lost in the summer. And you know, for a replacement, it was always going to be tough to replace Will. We all knew that. But you know, if there's one player you could have got in, and you know, genuinely at the moment could just be a little bit better in terms of his experience, you know, it could only be David Ford. And as I say, for our signing of the season and our player of the season, it's definitely got to be David Ford. Without him, as I say, I think we'd be sort of about 17th, 18th rather than sort of 12th, 13th like we are now. So yeah, David Ford gets my vote, I think.
Okay, so I'm going to really upset you now, because for me, I think I know it's not going to be a popular choice with you, but I think Greg Taylor, I'd give half season player of the year to. I think he's much maligned within the club, but I think, you know, we've asked him to play in lots of different positions, and some he's played more successfully than others. But I actually genuinely think that he's made a really big contribution to what we've been doing this season. You know, he's still got. Well, if he's still learning, he's still got a lot to learn. But yeah, I think as a contribution over the half season generally, I think he's done quite well. Obviously, you disagree with that one, and Lynchy would as well, probably. But there we go. That's my choice. Ollie, what's yours?
Well, a few probably pre-Christmas, about November, October, so I would have definitely said David Ford, but I think I'm just going with Tim. I'll go Greg Taylor. I think two reasons. One, probably because I think in the last couple of months there's been a couple of occasions, I'm careful not to criticise him so much, but there's been a few shaky moments for Ford, but he's been incredible. You know, one of the best signings we've had since I've been watching. But I went Greg Taylor just simply because, similar to Tim, the impact he's made, and from the vast improvement we've seen from him in a number of different positions as well, I think it's been, you know, astronomical. Yeah. And also, probably if we're looking ahead to the end of the season, I think someone like Giovanni Brown can probably get in there potentially if he continues scoring goals. He could probably be your per season, depending on how his second half of the season goes. I think the thing with Deegan, I would put Deegan in there, shout out Deegan as well, but he's sort of in a position where he doesn't really get noticed much. You know, his job goes unnoticed, but he'd be another one I'd put in there as well. But for me, Greggy T.
And then I've got a text here. Greggy T, best half-season player, followed closely by Ford, and that's from Ollie's dad. So there it is. It looks like Greg T is the... Yeah. Okay, so it's Mansfield, obviously, on Saturday, which it's going to be an interesting time to see which team turns up to actually play that game. Whether we get the half boring, half exciting team, the all exciting team, or the all boring team turns up, and it will be interesting, as you say, to see, you know, if we can add another player into the mix before Saturday, particularly someone to play up front and support Uche, and you know, hopefully be a bit of a goal scorer, either to inspire Uche, not that he needs inspiring him, he's got 10 goals for a half season, which is not a bad haul, but to get someone else who's going to work up alongside him, I think would be really good. Any thoughts on that, Matt?
Yeah, hopefully we can get somebody in. We know what Mansfield are going to be like. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, they're going to be nasty. And in fact, to be fair, if anybody's going to drag the game down Saturday, it's going to be Mansfield, because they're going to come and spoil the game. So it's going to be a horrible, nasty game. And I'm not looking forward to this one. I've got to say, it's probably about the only one out of the month I'm not looking forward to, because just I know what Steve Evans plays like. So it's going to be a tough one. Unfortunately, I'll say Taft's gone back, so that was half part of your hero Greg Taylor's performance in the central defence on Saturday, but. You know, never mind, it's horses for courses. Jake Carroll at left back, it should be fun as well. But it's going to be a tough game, but we know we've got to win it. And that's the main thing. So as long as we can get 3 points, that's the main thing from Saturday. And hopefully it won't. Maybe I'll get called off again, you know, just so we don't have to watch Steve Evans jump up and down for 90 minutes, because that'll be depressing for anyone, especially me.
Excellent. Okay, anything to add there before we finish off at Cambridge?
Just going to say, going into the game, a new striker or a new signing can really boost the crowd and get people really sort of revved up for the match as well.
Because I think that's the difficulty, is that now, having done so well over the Christmas period, if we now don't get a result against Mansfield, then, you know, we're kind of back to square one. People will forget those very quickly if we don't get, especially if we don't play very well when we're doing it. So I think it is important.
If we don't kick on over the next few weeks as well. Yeah. Put the hard work that's been going over the Christmas period sort of down. Yeah.
And the other thing as well is that Derry's going to have an eye on whether he's going to get a contract extension or contract renewal. So, and the only way that's going to happen is if we are genuinely, you know, going to make a push for, well, not if we're going to make a push. I think we've got to finish in the top seven to get a playoff spot if that's going to happen. So he's going to be keen to push on. So, it'll be interesting to see what we get next Saturday. But, Matt, thanks very much for joining us. We shall talk to you, we'll see you in the studio next week. Thanks very much then, Matt. So there we go. We will take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Cambridge City first, and then we'll finish off with Histon.
Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
From the terraces on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So we're just trying to get hold of Steve. Hopefully he'll be in. It's ringing at least. Hey, Steve, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Dean.
excellent. Well, unfortunately, we haven't got you on the phone to talk about football, because you haven't actually played this year with the Kempston game and I can't remember who was yesterday. Was it
Hanwell?
Yeah, Hanwell Town being postponed. We were chatting before. I mean, we know that Westwood Road's been a difficult pitch over the winter period in the past. I know a lot of work's been done, but it looks like it's still playing up.
Yeah, I think it's, we had the first season there. It was really bad. We had just a bad winter, and it was really taking its toll playing with. Obviously, you've got to remember that Snives play on it, so it's every week. And of course, sometimes when there's a backlog, you know, we play on, say, a midweek on a Monday, and sometimes we'll play on a Tuesday. It can be, you know, back-to-back days, and when you're trying to get the games in. And that year was dreadful. And In fairness, they did do some work on it. It still wasn't ideal, but last season we didn't have a single postponement of the home games, which was really good. But I think St Ives did. It was just the way that the weather falls. You know, sometimes you're at the mercy of the weather, of course. This year, I think, to my mind, it was a bit safe to call it off, if I'm honest, but the decision was made partly, obviously, in conjunction with the referee himself, so that's the first thing. But also, I think it's with one eye on protecting the pitch, because they learned from last, you know, say 2 seasons ago, when, you know, when games were 50-50 and we were sort of pushing to get it on, it ended up doing longer term damage. So I guess the argument is, you know, try and preserve it for the future rest of the season, if you like. So you kind of see the logic, but to me, if it is fairly close call as it was and the weather was good as it was, you know, perhaps we should have gone and tried to get it on. But, you know, I think obviously the thing there was actually when the decisions were made, because it was quite interesting. Because obviously at Kempston on New Year's Day, the decision was made at 2 o'clock when everyone had just started arriving, and there was a downpour about 12 to sort of 1 o'clock, something like that, half one, which obviously they didn't predict, and it was a deluge. And I was walking to the ground. It did look wet on the outside, sort of on the roads, so it looked like there'd been a really big shower beforehand. However, you know, to call it off at 2 o'clock kind of put everybody's back up, but they were arguing that, you know, they couldn't foresee it, which, you know, is fair enough. Whereas we called our game off with Hanwell at 9:30 when they're in sort of West London, they needed to leave about maybe 11, 12, so we called it off really early. So it's interesting that kind of there's no hard and fast rule. Like, you know, it's sort of when you call the game off, you know, do you leave it to the last minute to give it a chance to go ahead but then risk upsetting everybody when it's, if it's last minute? Or do you call it off early to allow people the chance to do something else with their day, but run the risk of actually it could have gone ahead if they'd let it dry out? So it's a difficult balance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for us.
Because we were chatting about this earlier on, because as I said, I mentioned Bury and Accrington were two games that a lot of Cambridge fans travelled to, and some, I mean, certainly the Bury one, which was cancelled very late, people actually arrived at the ground and were told it was off. And I know it's always really difficult, because you want to play the game, you know, because you don't want the fixture congestion, you don't want the hassles of rearranging, but you kind of think that there should be a hard and fast rule about it, almost, that says basically if it's, you know, 60-40, that it's going to be unplayable at a time when fans are reasonably being expected to have left for a game, then do you call it off? I mean, especially if there are certain things that you can, you know, you kind of depend on. If it's frozen and you know there's snow on the pitch, then obviously they'll have called it off early anyway, and all you've got to do is make sure that any inspection that happens is early enough so that nobody travels if they don't need to. Rain is always a difficult one, because you might get a heavy pitch that is playable right up until, as has happened, the Bury and the Accrington game and the Kempston game, it suddenly becomes unplayable, because, you know, that last little bit of rain or that last large amount of rain is the one that finishes the pitch off. Yeah. We were told when we got to the Bury game that nobody from Bury expected the game to go ahead, because it had been so wet all week. they knew the pitch, and you kind of think, yeah, well, you know, at least the club should put out that, you know, the history is that it doesn't play very well when it gets rain all week, and then it rains again. So, you know, try and check, because if they kind of people got into their heads that, you know, they've got to check 2 or 3 times while they're travelling up there, so at least they can get a warning, you know, that they might have to turn back a third of the way back. But it's always difficult, isn't it? You want to play.
I agree. I think that's right. I think you know, there should be some sort of rule on regards to travel. I mean, obviously, the safe thing was that, you know, with us, Hanwell hadn't set off, so we let them know nice and early. And I think, in fairness, we, and a lot of teams are looking at it the night before, particularly with frost and overnight, you know, cold weather, they would always like take the view of looking at it almost on the Friday night and almost pre-warning that it might not, you know, sort of fearing the worst sort of thing. So that's an improvement over previous seasons, that teams are planning ahead. You know, the thing with our level, of course, is even stepping down a division, I think not all teams have full-time kind of groundsmen or people there. It's usually just like a chairman or an owner who's, you know, putting the money in, keeping clubs afloat, and obviously loves the clubs. And they're often the ones that, you know, the volunteers, the ones that sort of know the pitch. And of course, even at the Southern Prem and higher, the pitches have got better to some degree, and they usually have somebody who's relatively knowledgeable, you know, about it. Whereas with us, yes, we do, because we've got two clubs on it. So obviously St Ives and us will know kind of the background to it. But, you know, when you look at Kempston, they'll know somebody said it was near the River Ouse or the Grey Two, so they know that that can be liable to be in trouble sometimes. So, you know, again, it's that local knowledge, like you said, I think is important. I think with Kempston, they were keen to get the game played because it was a bank holiday. And they were expecting a big crowd. You know, we were going to bring quite a few. I think it wasn't that far. So I think they were desperate to get a bumper crowd. That was, and in fairness to them, they did call inspection at 11:30 and said it was on. So that was why I think everyone was peeved, because it was that unexpected outburst that was really heavy, that kind of, as you say, did for the game, which was, I guess you can say, nothing they can do. And they say the beauty was it wasn't desperately far. So I know one or two people started kind of near enough arriving, others were at the Black Cat roundabout. So, you know, it wasn't horrendous to come. You were talking about Bury and Accrington, I mean, they were longer places to go. And of course, I remember Ridge City, we went to Newport when they were in the Southern Prem, as it was. And we went, and they had a deluge about 2 hours before, and it got called off. And that was obviously, you know, a hell of a way to go. And I went from uni, and it was just, you know, you didn't expect it, because when you're checking all the updates, it's, you know, yeah, it's on, and the inspection, pre-inspection said it's on, and then to have it change, I think the changing of mind is the one that really does for fans, because, you know, you're all set to go, you set off, etc., and then you're left even more disappointed. So you're right, I think there should be some sort of rule about travel. You know, when you look at the distance, the thing that they normally do is they take into account the coach, the team, and of course the team arrives a lot earlier than players and fans. So you could argue that they should try and leave it a bit later for when kind of people would set off, maybe to an hour later than the team, because teams arrive a lot earlier. And the other thing, of course, at this level is cost, because as I understand it, if a team does set off and hire a coach, or if they, you know, got to the ground and it's off, then the home team is liable to pay the expenses, really, because obviously it's a wasted journey. They are liable. I think they do pay it. And then obviously the away team would just rebook it. So, you know, it's a lot of factors. But we're getting to that stage where, you know, this probably may happen more and more, particularly January. I think January is probably the worst month of the year historically for postponements. If you go back in our recent past, I don't know about the Football League as well, but I imagine it's pretty similar. January is the one where, you know, we're going to get this. So I guess it's just, the good thing is we have all the updates on social media. We've got fairly good communication, so you should be able to find out. I mean, you know, back in the old days, you'd have to ring it up. So it's good that we can sort of find out stuff, but disappointing nonetheless, because obviously we were in good form prior to the new year, I think we wanted to get these games, you know, underway. But, you know, look, it's two matches. We've not got a backlog of fixtures. The Kempston game has been rearranged for a week on Tuesday anyway, so that's quite quick. So it's not the end of the world. I think actually it gives a couple of players a chance to recharge as well. So we've got to look at it as a positive. And as long as the gap isn't too big in terms of you going 2 or 3 weeks, then, because then you lose sharpness and lose that match practice. But I think if it's only a week, then it's okay.
Just briefly then, before we finish, I mean, the difficulty you've got is, as you say, it's a while now since you've played, and you've got third place Beaconsfield sitting directly above you is your next game now. That's not ideal.
No, but I think it's only 1 week, as I say, because you've got to remember two matches, but the one was a midweek in terms of New Year's Day, so it's only been a week's break. I think it gives a chance. One or two niggling injuries, particularly with the goalkeeper, Niall, you know, Niall had missed the game for his birth of his child 1 week. Then he got injured, of course, on Boxing Day, and he was sort of 50-50 for Saturday. I think he will be fit now, which is important. So, you know, things like that can kind of work in your favour. But, yeah, I mean, Beaconsfield are a bit of a surprise package, if I'm honest. I didn't necessarily expect them to be up there. Their away record is brilliant. I think they've unbeaten away. They've drawn one and won everything away, so they beat us. Home, you know, is where they're perhaps, if it is a weakness at the moment, that's where the weakness. I think we know what they're about, but they will be good. You know, they're not third for any reason. They're a good side, and they've got one or two players we know. Goldie Capella played for us, I think, had a little spell last season. He's quite good. He's quite quick, and they've got a good little catchment area. You know, players from Slough and so forth. That, yeah, fringe players that perhaps, you know, could play at a higher level. So they've got a decent side. So it will be a tough game, but, you know, they're set above us, yes, but actually these are the games we want, because if we go there and win, you know, we put the pressure back on them, we could jump ahead, etc. So I think it's kind of the sort of six, people talk about 6 points at the bottom, they're almost 6 points at the top, and I think they're great to be involved in if you if you're in the right end of the table. And I think if we go there and play like we can, there's no reason in the world why we can't get a good result down there. I think it's winnable, albeit very tough. So we're looking forward to it. Hopefully that will be on, say, for a good week of weather. But it's one we're looking forward to. And then say we've got the Kempston rearranged on the Tuesday. So, they do come quickly, but it's good to get back in the rhythm. Hopefully we'll get some games on.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully you'll get a game on, and we'll be talking to you about a result next week. Thanks very much, Steve. Cheers.
Cheers,
Tim. So there you go. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we will talk about Histon.
Online, on digital and on FM.
This is Cambridge 105 Radio.
From the terraces on Cambridge 105 Radio.
When we come back, we'll be talking all things Histon.
Out in the country, far from all the subtle noise of the city, there's a village green. It's been a long time since I last set eyes on the church with the steeple down by the village green.
So we were just debating where that promo, where the music for that promo for us from, and it was explained to me. We haven't changed our promos actually since we started. I keep thinking we ought to, but then I found out we have to pay for it. So I'm less keen on doing it now than I was, but there you go. Histon, the only team to play, and they were playing second place Coggeshall, who Lance believes are the team that will win that league ultimately. And Ollie Mars was there yesterday. We saw him. I was so tempted to get a selfie with him, but I thought it's just too embarrassing at 52 to get a selfie with Ollie Mears. But there you go, nice bloke. I spoke to him before the game, he's nice. But he must have put the crowd up by, as I say, about probably 10 or 15 extra people came down on the off chance that he was there, and then got autographs and selfies and everything with him afterwards. But to the game, I mean, As a spectacle, it wasn't fantastic. It was entertaining, as you pointed out, Mark, for the effort that went into particularly the last 20-25 minutes. But you meet some teams occasionally who moan and whinge and whine. Coggeshall are definitely one of them.
Yeah, it was nice to get a win over them for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because we haven't actually beaten a top five side, I think, unless it could have been against Ely. I think they could have been fifth when we beat them, but they had quite a few games. Well, we had quite a few games in hand over them, so I guess you can say that this is probably the first proper win against one of the top sides.
And interesting, because we talked about this, and I think it's in the interview I've got with Lance afterwards, that on the Christmas one he said that you've had a couple of good runs, but they've always coincided with teams further down in the league, where you'd expect if you've got aspirations to be in the top six, which is what he'd always said, that's what you'd expect, and you needed to get that against some of the better teams. And I think that's what made the result so special yesterday for me.
I mean, we've got the squad to do it. I think, we've got the players and the experience there to, on our day, beat anyone. The other reason really was just because, as you say, they're one of those sides that like to... I mean, they're good enough not to have to resort to doing a job over teams, but there was certainly in the ref's ear all game, and there was a little bit of gamesmanship going on. So it was nice, because apparently they exploited that at the return fixture, so it was good to put one over
them. Because that was a 4-0 loss, wasn't it?
It was a 4-0 loss. Players weren't great, and we had a few out as well. Yeah. So it was nice to get a bit of redemption. And as you pointed out, technically it wasn't the best game of football you'll ever see, but what was entertaining, like you say, was just the pure effort and energy levels of both sets of players, to be fair. We've done really well at times to keep them out. Because they're both their wingers, which I thought were probably
were good,
probably some of the best players I've seen in this league. Very quick, great touch on them, quite tricky as well. And the number of times they got to the byline, I lost count.
But to keep them out and to really defend that box to the last man, I was so impressed. I mean, we had to weather some stuff at times, and you know, I thought we did that fantastically. And Max York really marshalled his men well, so it was great to see. And to get two goals in front, you know, I think we're in dreamland. Really, you could see by the celebrations. You know, we knew we'd taken a big leap to get towards that 3 points. And I mean, it was a nervy 25 minutes because they went down to 10, but it shows what good side they are, because even at 10 they were still threatening, and they got a goal back. It was probably the one time we slacked off a little bit and were a little bit loose to our man in the box, and they managed to punish us for it. And they're that type of team. I think if you give them any sort of chance, and they'll punish you 9 times out of 10, and they got that goal back, and it was a bit of a tense affair. And I guess really that's what set it up to be such a fantastic game, because like I say, 11 versus 10, they were still well within the game, and they knew they had a sniff. So you know, it was great stuff, and fortunately we managed to hold on for what was a great 3 points. And really now, I know we've got Hadley next week, which, you know, if we keep our heads, we should really be able to get a win against them. And then after that, we've got tabletoppers Felixstowe, who have been a little bit out of form, actually, recently. They were, I think after the first 20 games, they were 1-19, drawn one. And, you know, the next lot of fixtures that they've had, they've now drawn, I think, 3 and lost 2 or 3 as well. So they've gone through a little bit of a wobbly patch, and, you know, perhaps this is probably the perfect time to play them. And, you know, I was saying to a few of the fellow fans that if we can go through January unbeaten and perhaps get, you know, another 2 or 3 wins, and that actually sets us up nicely for the back end of the season to really have a good go at the top three. Because other than having a look at the fixtures, other than Brantham and God Manchester, I think actually we've got a relatively you'd say easy fixture list. So like I say, if we can get over a big month in January, then I think, you know, we've got a good chance of actually, like I say, really having a good go at those top teams. And you know, who knows where we could be at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at time. I've messed up on the timing, and I've got the post match. I'm going to play some of it. We might not hear it all because we've got other bits and pieces we just need to squeeze in. But this is what Lance had to say following the game.
Lance, winning is getting to be a bit of a habit.
Yeah, today was very pleasing in a sense, because I think I've said to you before, I think these are the best side in the league. You know, they're physical, they're strong. Even with 10 men, they still look dangerous. Obviously, I think that obviously helped our cause today in that sense. But I also think that the way we went about it, the way we slowed the game down when we had to, the way we put it in channels when we had to. And I think if you look at the two goals we score to go 2-0 up, Evan has a great chance to make it 3-0, and then they go and score 2 minutes later to make it 2-1. But I still think, even with Evan's miss, I think at times when we, on the counter, it was like us playing away from home. The counter-attack, we looked dangerous, and we've hit the post, the keeper's kicked, well, one's been cleared off the line, and then we've had two v1s situations where the final ball has let us down. So although we've hung on in at times, I think at times we've played some good football as well. I think, but that's the mix you need against the sides that are going to be top two, top three, that you need to be able to battle it out. I think everyone to a man today, you know, from the goalkeeper all the way through, even the lads who came on, put their, you know, their bodies on the line. You know, we stopped everything trying to get in the box, you know, blocks in the area. It's one of those days where you come away from it and it felt like a bit like the good old days in a way, the way we've battled against a good side that could go up to step three, step two, if they, you know, the funding they have. And so a good day all round.
So yeah, there's a couple more minutes of that, but we are running out of time quickly. I mean, that the gist of the rest of the interview, we talked about first of all, that's the first goal that you've conceded in 6 hours of football, which again is a really good thing. You know, it must be pleasing when you're coming up to, you know, as you say, although you've got a relatively light schedule going out into February, apart from you know, you've got Felixstowe, who you know, certainly at the start of the league looked like they were going to run away with a perfect season, but not looking quite as good now. But obviously, again, you'll want to repeat what you did against Coggeshall, against Felixstowe. I think the great thing is there was obviously a plan as to what Lance wanted to do in that game, and it kind of worked out, you know, it worked out really well for them.
Yeah, I think Yeah, he's right in saying that we played well on the break. But I wouldn't say it was a game where we just sat back all the time and waited for opportunity. I think both teams had spells. For the first 10 or 15 minutes, it was pretty much one-way traffic until Carmen got his goal. So, yeah, and then after that, I think we sort of settled into the game quite well. And then I think once we got that second goal, it was one of those ones where after the elation of going two goals clear, I think everyone realises now that it's going to be all hands to the pump because, you know, Coggeshall don't have anything to lose, effectively. And I think that's when we did start to sit back again. But I suppose it's a good game plan as well because, you know, as has been alluded to in the past, we've got plenty of pace in the side and, you know, it's the perfect time to play it when they're... when they're going to go for you, and you can then start to expose holes in their back four. And yeah, I think he's right. We used that effectively, especially second half. And like I say, we had a few chances where Matty Hayden's hit the post. We had a few cleared off the line. Evan could have made it 3-0 just before actually they went and scored. So yeah, we did really well, and I think actually on the balance of play and the balance of chances that both sides had, I think definitely we were well worth the 3 points. I can't really remember too many times where you kind of you feel they should have scored. I think really, if anything, we could have had a few more. So you know, that was a pleasing thing really, is that it wasn't one way traffic. It wasn't a lucky win. We fully deserve that, and you know, if we can put those sorts of energy levels and fight and commitment into the rest of our games, and especially, you know, the bigger games when we need it. And like I say, we've got every chance really of getting into that top two or three, and then, you know, come the end of the season with the mix-up that's due to take place, we'll see where we are.
Cool, excellent. I've blown it again in terms of women's football, sorry. So I went to see the Histon game. Histon ran out easy winners in the end despite making hard work of the first half, 4-0. Cambridge United, the women's team, the reserves, I think they won 2-1 against Silver End Ladies. The first team lost to Wimbledon 2-0. And the Cambridge women also, Cambridge City women won, but I can't remember what the score was. That's all we've got time for this week, so we shall catch you again next week. Stay tuned. Chris Durden is on after us. Thank you very much.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Want that traditional taste of authentic handmade fresh Chinese food? At Zhonghua Snacks, we serve the best steamed buns, noodles, dumplings and traditional cuisine right here in Cambridge. We've even got vegan options available. We're the only Chinese restaurant in Cambridge to be recognised twice by The Guardian for our outstanding food. We're open from 12 p.m. to 9 at night, every day except Tuesday. Call Cambridge 354573 or pop in and see our menu at 13 Norfolk Street, Zhonghua Snacks, your authentic Chinese takeaway and restaurant, just 5 minutes walk from the city centre.
Get a 5-day weather forecast for the city and South Cambridgeshire on our website.
See cambridge105.co.uk.